This is a Monday edition of Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Later on this edition of Ozarks at Large, a conversation with a filmmaker about his documentary that premieres tonight in Fayetteville. The movie concentrates on Washington County Drug Court. Plus, a tour of Fort Smith's greenest, that is, most sustainable spots. And we get ready for a haunted trolley that will roll through downtown Fort Smith.
But first, we begin with the election. Early voting starts today, and Election Day is 2 weeks from tomorrow. The election season is here, and voters are measuring their candidate choices to see if they fit their political preferences. Concerned citizens watch debates, listen to public radio reports, check out political websites, and read opinion sections in the newspaper. And there's Project Vote Smart, a nonprofit, nonpartisan candidate guide. And as Jacqueline Froelich reports, this year it's offering even more tactical tools.
When you open up Project Vote Smart's Vote Easy website, you'll hear gay political music play as a striped drape unfurls and chunks of bright green grassy U.S. states plop into place. Click on the Arkansas chunk and you'll see how many registered voters we have, plus a place to type in your zip code to see what's happening in your district. That's when a bunch of interactive lawn signs appear. Adelaide Kimball is board member and senior advisor at Project Vote Smart.
You type in your zip code, start to answer a question on immigration or gun control or health care, education, the environment, Afghanistan, tax levels. And as you answer each of those questions, the candidates for Congress in your own district, their yard signs will advance or recede depending on your level of agreement with them on that, on those questions. In the end, 5 or 10 minutes later, what you are looking at is the yard sign of the candidate who is probably most like you on the issues that you care about.
Birds and crickets chirp when you stop to study things, providing a kind of a relaxed atmosphere. A few more clicks on any yard sign and you'll find even more data on congressional candidates in Arkansas, including links to all Arkansas key votes and a detailed listing of all state races. The staff at Project Vote Smart aggressively compile candidate positions and records by collaborating with over 200 political scientists, journalists who cover Congress and state legislatures, and leaders both left and right who examine national and local polls, party platforms, speeches, and legislative agendas.
The journalists that we partner with on this Key Votes test review our selections and review our language to make sure that they are accurate and their language is not partisan in any way. That's one of the protections that we have to our system. Another protection to making sure that there's no perception of slant or bias in Vote Smart's data is that every member of our founding board has to sign off on our budget and our programs every year, and including the questions we ask on the political courage test.
Nuanced questions called the Public Vote Smart Political Courage Test are posed to running and retiring candidates. For example, if higher education budgets ought to be slashed, health and welfare funding increased, environmental regulations eased, and social issues addressed. U.S. Senator Blanche Lincoln and U.S. House member Mike Ross passed the political courage test, while Congressman Vic Snyder, John Bozeman, and Marion Barry did not. Kimball says most candidates fear their opponents might use their positions in attack ads, so refuse or only respond to a few questions that their consultants stamp as safe.
We've found across the country both Republican and Democratic candidates are clamming up. They are not willing to answer questions on issues that the voters care about that they're going to have to deal with if they are elected. So what we do is sort of do an end run around the candidates and their campaigns, look at their public statements, look at their records in office if they've held office, look at their websites if they have issue information on their websites. We compile as much factual, relevant information as we can so voters can get a sense of who these candidates are and what they'll do for them if they win office.
Project Vote Smart was established by Adelaide Kimball's husband, Richard. He's a former Arizona legislator who ran for U.S. Senate in 1986 on the Democratic ticket against John McCain and lost. She says thousands of volunteers and staff have worked at Project Vote Smart since it was founded in 1992.
We are headquartered in Montana on a 150-acre ranch. It's a research center with T1 lines running into it, so it's very high-tech, but it is drop-dead beautiful here, and we're here because we have to attract free labor. College interns and volunteers come from all over the country and really all over the world and do the research, help us put this whole program together for voters.
And when any volunteer or staff walks through the door, they must check their political views and affiliations, she said.
Our annual budget runs about $1.5 million. That money that we get is all from either foundation grants or individual contributions. We will not accept funding or support from any special interest group, corporate, union, or other group that lobbies government on any issue at any level.
Prior to midterm and general elections, Project Vote Smart mass mails a free newsprinted handbook to media and organizations as a courtesy containing critical information on key races in every state. Project Vote Smart also operates a hotline for those seeking immediate satisfaction by talking to a real person.
Researchers who are standing by the telephone all day long, 5 days a week, and they will answer your question on any topic that deals with politics.
Last January, the U.S. Supreme Court unleashed campaign finance rules, allowing unlimited spending by corporations and unions for political ads. Now, both liberal and conservative groups can accept unlimited donations, plus don't have to report their donors, which critics say obscures opponent campaigns.
We are dismayed by the quality and content of information that's being spewed out by candidates and campaigns. It's worse than it's ever been. We feel like voters deserve one place, one source for information that they know doesn't have a hidden agenda, that's just the facts, basically, on those candidates and who want to represent them, or those who already do, those who are already in office. So Project Vote Smart has provided a wonderful alternative to voters for information on candidates who want their vote.
And between now and November 2nd, the race to secure those votes ought to get really interesting given a Republican surge, not to mention a growing discontentment with conventional American politics. Reporting for Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
During the election season, Project Vote Smart gets 16.7 million hits a day. If you'd like to learn more about political races in your district, you can go to votesmart.org. Tubas and trumpets this week throughout the KUAF listening area. The University of Arkansas Fort Smith holds its fifth annual Oktoberfest this afternoon at 4 in the Reynolds Room of the Smith Pendergraph Campus Center. This evening's free concert begins at 7:30. All high school and college euphonium and tuba players are invited to perform in a mass tuba euphonium ensemble as part of the Oktoberfest activities tonight. And the University of Arkansas Fulbright College Department of Music will feature the trumpet studio recital Wednesday night at 7:30 in the Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall on the Fine Arts Center. That concert, too, is free and open to the public.
The League of Women Voters of Washington County will host a public forum on rising child poverty in Northwest Arkansas October 20th from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the Pat Walker Center for Seniors at 12 East Appleby Road in Fayetteville. U.S. Census figures released this month have shown a sharp rise in child poverty in Northwest Arkansas's 3rd Congressional District. A panel discussion at the forum will focus on the latest indicators, stories of families in our local communities, as well as proposed policy initiatives. For more information on the forum or league membership, visit lwvarwc.org. This is Ozarks at Large.
This is KUAF station manager Rick Stockdale. Our fall on-air fundraiser starts on Wednesday, and we're hoping to make this our shortest fundraiser ever. We'd like to finish in 3 days. You can help by sending your contribution today. We'll be counting all money contributed to KUAF during October toward our goal of $140,000. Once we reach that goal, the fundraiser will end. If everyone listening right now contributed today, the on-air fundraiser would be finished before it starts. Just mail your check to KUAF, University of Arkansas, Fayetteville, 72701, or contribute online at KUAF.com. Click on Contribute Now and fill out the blanks. Thanks a lot.
During the Halloween season, many people seek out the thrill of being scared by viewing horror movies or visiting spook houses. The Fort Smith Museum of History will frighten and inform local residents with creepy true stories during its annual Murder and Mayhem Trolley Tour. Exhibit designer Caroline Spear says tour participants will learn factual stories about murder and scandals in Fort Smith.
We start here at the museum, and we just kind of wind through downtown Fort Smith and over into the historic district, and we tell you different stories about some involved murders, some involved sinners and scandals, some involved just haunted places or spooks or kind of some legends that you might hear about, you know, such and such house. And then some of them are just about the history of the place too. We have a lot of families who've been around a long time, and so of course that part of Fort Smith was originally one of the earlier parts, and so the older houses have the, you know, older families. And so even if it's maybe not particularly haunted, then you also get some history about it, and maybe, you know, some history about the family, that kind of thing. And then some of them are noted for architectural style, or just what their involvement was maybe in Fort Smith. So you get even more than just a haunted trolley ride. And just for clarity's sake, in case anybody asked, it's not a haunted trolley ride in that you have to worry about somebody jumping out at you all the time. It's haunted because of the content.
Spear explains that the trolley is actually a transit bus designed to look like a trolley and is not the 1926 streetcar that runs through Fort Smith. A previous museum director originated the Murder and Mayhem Trolley Tour a few years ago. She developed the character of Miss Suzette, a woman who acted as the tour's sole guide.
She was one of the ladies of the night, is who she portrayed, or a soiled dove, as she called it in scripts. So she would dress as this character, and she was very much a Southern, there was a lot of flamboyance to it, and she would do these tours and go through Belgrove Historic District and tell you about some of the different houses and some of the things that happened and whether they were supposedly haunted, you know, that kind of thing. And she had to leave because of health reasons, and so we took it over. And instead of just, she did one character, and she did every night for the entire month or every weekend. It's a very daunting task, so we split it up between, there's three or four of us.
The current tour features a variety of characters, and a different one leads the tour each night.
We try to do characters that in somehow relate to the history of Fort Smith. One that's going to be done this year, I think, is a woman who would have been a lady of the night, just a different woman, but she was actually killed by the original trolley car. She was hit and killed, and I think maybe that's one portrayal. The other one, there were a lot of gypsies here at one time, and there was a drugstore downtown that was called Marie Cole's, C-O-L-E, and she was a gypsy queen, or gypsy, what's a title? I'd have to look through here. But anyway, there's one girl, I think, who's going to portray Marie Cole. So she has kind of a gypsy attire. Then we also have a husband and wife couple who he portrays Judge Parker. Looks a lot like him, white hair, a little beard. His wife, they're with a reenactment group, and they're real involved in the community. And he dresses up as Judge Parker, and then she dresses time period, so I assume that she's Mrs. Parker. And they kind of double team it and do, and they, I think, maybe add a little bit more to theirs than what we have just in the script. All of us try to add a little something, but I think they even have a couple of stories maybe that we don't actually have written down. But, and then we have a couple of narrators who are kind of standby.
Although the guides are the ones providing the historical information, guests are invited to share their stories as well.
We try to take some time to just chit-chat while we're doing it too, and because occasionally people want to share their stories, or they want to know, oh, hey, what about this one? You know, or have you heard this one? Or do you know that about that house? That kind of thing. So there's time in there for a little bit of audience involvement also.
Spear says the tour contains PG-13 material and doesn't recommend it for younger kids, but adds that participation is at the parents' discretion. Other than some gory material, she says the tour will appeal to a lot of people.
It's a lot of fun. It really is. Because some of these things people know about Fort Smith. Some of them they don't. Some of them are kind of surprising because, like I said, a few of the stories are really gruesome, very disturbing. We also talk about Judge Parker and the gallows, and some of them are kind of fun. You know, some of them you go, oh, my, you know, because it's, you know, definitely a scandal. And then some of them are just, you know, like I said, just haunted houses. So, you know, just there's a little bit, I think, probably for everybody. And it's a fun ride. They're $12 a ticket, so they're not real expensive, but it is a fundraiser for the museum, and so everything that we make goes towards the museum. We're a private nonprofit organization, and so we hold fundraisers throughout the year to raise money just to, you know, like most nonprofits, to keep us in operation. And this is our centennial year. The Museum Association has been around 100 years, and so hopefully, you know, we'll be around another 100. And this is usually our Mardi Gras is our biggest fundraiser of the year, but this one has proved to be a really good fundraiser for us. So we're hoping that it stays that way, and you know, and we're always, you know, if it has new stories or something that we don't know about, you know, let us know. That's part of the fun of it.
Tickets for the museum's annual fundraiser are available now, and Spear says guests should make reservations in advance.
Especially since we're doing it less weekends this month, it probably will fill up a little faster because there's just not as many nights to choose from. But Halloween night's a good one, especially if you're an adult and don't have to take kids out, because the historic district also does a trick-or-treat on Halloween night. And so not only are you doing the trolley, but you're getting to see everybody out with that kind of atmosphere, and you know, so it's really kind of neat.
Each tour lasts about 45 minutes. Tours start at 7 and 8 on Thursday nights, and at 7, 8, and 9 o'clock on Fridays, Saturdays, and Halloween night. More information is available by calling 479-783-7841.
This is Ozarks at Large. Last week, we spent some time reporting on how the University of Arkansas is trying to become a more sustainable campus. Later this week, the city of Fort Smith will take people on a tour to show off its efforts to become more energy efficient. The Fort Smith is Green tour will travel to nearly all corners of the city on Wednesday morning. Ozarks at Large's Ithi Egnihotri-Madolkar has this preview.
The Green and Clean Committee of the Fort Smith Chamber of Commerce is hosting the Fort Smith is Green tour on Wednesday between 8:30 a.m. and noon. According to Heather Morris, co-chair of the committee, the Green Tour is one of several initiatives that the city of Fort Smith has undertaken to promote sustainability.
One of our first items was last spring we presented an outstanding green business award, and two local businesses won that. That was one of our first initiatives. And then right now what we're focusing on is our Green Tour. We've put together a tour called Fort Smith is Green Tour, and it will focus on two areas in the Fort Smith region that have great green spaces that all of us can enjoy and need to protect.
The Green Tour is divided into two parts. First, participants will visit Chaffee Crossing to see the green initiatives in the area. Ivy Owen, Executive Director of the Fort Chaffee Redevelopment Authority, will lead the first part of the tour at Chaffee Crossing, where several important sustainable constructions are already underway.
The LEEDS certified Mars Pet Care Manufacturing Building, I think, is of the most interest to the tour people. They want to get inside and actually see a LEEDS certified building in operation and what it offers. And the Mars Pet Care building is, as far as I know, is the only manufacturing LEED certified building in the state of Arkansas. And it's the only pet care LEED certified building in the United States. So I think they're really interested in that.
Apart from the Mars Pet Care Manufacturing Building, the tour participants will also visit the Botanical Gardens Development Area, Janet Huckabee River Valley Nature Center, the area wetlands, Deer Trails Golf Course, the Marine Corps Leak Building with a wind spire, and the learning fields of Chaffee Crossing developed by the Master Gardeners. Another interesting initiative is the reuse of material from the Fort Chaffee World War II barracks for the construction of I-49.
The World War barracks We have the barracks that we're demolishing. Instead of just dumping those in our landfill, we are using the crushed brick and mortar for the base of I-49 when possible. So whenever the contractors that are doing that work can use this recycled material, we furnish it for them. So we hope that when people cross over onto Chaffee property on I-49, that we'll be able to have a sign there that says you are crossing over part of Chaffee history as a base of this highway.
The second part of the tour will showcase the sustainability initiatives at the Fort Smith landfill. Heather Morris says the landfill has recently undergone expansion.
It is the only landfill in the state of Arkansas that is permitted through the year 2070. So it is available and viable for use for the next 60 years. Most landfills are very close to being used up and not available to service their communities any longer. It is actually, you know, a very green space where people take the time to ensure that it is handled properly. For instance, there's a methane gas catch center or production area where the gas is caught and then sold to a local utility, AOG. So there's several things that go on out there to keep our area clean and green, and we want to focus on that as well.
According to Heather, the city of Fort Smith hopes to encourage citizens to talk about sustainability with the help of this tour.
Our goal is to raise awareness this year, to bring focus to what's available, and to provide education to our citizens, our businesses, our manufacturers, and all the people within our area that we touch and reach on how to continue and maintain the green focus, the energy efficiency, the sustainability, the reduce, reuse, recycle, all of those things you hear about. How do you do that personally at home? How do you do that in your business? And how do you do that in the community?
The Fort Smith is Green Tour is open to the public. For more information, please call Heather Morris on 782-4500. For Ozarks at Large, this is Iti Agnihotri Madhokar.
This is Ozarks at Large. This reminder that a music drive continues at KUAF. We're looking for jazz records, vinyl jazz records, in fair to good condition that could be donated to KUAF at 9 South School across from the Fayetteville Public Library. Thanks to everyone who has already contributed. For more information, or if you have records you'd like us to pick up, you can call KUAF at 800-522-KUAF. And then tune in every Friday night at midnight for Goodnight Jazz, as Daniel Estes plays only vinyl jazz, beginning every Friday night at midnight. This is Ozarks at Large.
Deep down in Louisiana.
Chuck Berry was born on this date in 1926 in St. Louis, Missouri. The singer, songwriter, and guitarist was one of the most popular and influential performers in rhythm and blues and rock and roll music in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. Berry gained early exposure to music through his family's participation in its church choir, through the blues and country western music he heard on the radio, and through music classes. Berry was still attending high school when he was sent to serve 3 years for armed robbery at a Missouri prison for young offenders. After his release, he worked at an auto plant, studied hairdressing, and played music in small nightclubs. Berry traveled to Chicago in search of a recording contract and was signed to the Chess label. In 1955, his first recording session produced Maybelline, which stayed on the pop charts for 11 weeks. Berry followed this success with extensive tours and hit after hit, including Roll Over Beethoven, School Day, Rock and Roll Music, Sweet Little 16, and Johnny B. Goode. Although he recorded more sporadically in the 1970s and 80s, he continued to appear in concert, most often performing with backing bands comprised of local musicians. Berry's public visibility increased in 1987 with the publication of his book Chuck Berry, The Autobiography, and the release of the documentary film Hail Hail Rock and Roll, featuring footage from his 60th birthday concert and guest appearances by Keith Richards and Bruce Springsteen. a tribute to Barry's centrality to rock and roll, came when his song Johnny Be Good was among the pieces of music placed on a copper phonograph record attached to the side of the Voyager 1 satellite, hurtling through outer space in order to give distant or future civilizations a chance to acquaint themselves with the culture of the planet Earth in the 20th century. In 1984, he was presented with a Grammy Award for Lifetime Achievement. He was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1986. On this date in 1964, Winthrop Rockefeller opened the Museum of Automobiles with 33 cars on display, some of them his own, along with others from the Rockefeller family. When Rockefeller made Arkansas his home in 1953, he had developed Winrock Farms on Pettigean Mountain. In 1961, he purchased a collection of fine antique and classic cars from the James Melton Museum. He had a building constructed on Pettigean Mountain to house the cars and named it the Museum of Automobiles. The museum is located atop Pettigean Mountain in Conway County. It's primarily dedicated to the exhibition of quality antique and vintage automobiles, as well as related items for the cultural and educational benefit of the general public. The first long-distance telephone line between Chicago and New York was opened on this date in 1892. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
It's Monday, October 18th, 2010. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Becca Bacon-Martin, editor of What's Up from the Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
2010.
I'll get there.
I give up.
2010, not 2010, Becca says.
If it's Monday and you need a pick-me-up, mm-hmm. have I got a deal for you.
I'm all ears.
At 4 o'clock today in the Reynolds Room of the Smith Pendergraph Campus Center at the University of Arkansas in Fort Smith, Oktoberfest.
I like it. Love the name, love the idea, love the tuba.
It's free. 788-7972 for more information. And tomorrow, a little plan ahead, Brian Bowers, an Auto Harp master.
Master.
Will be at Good Folk Productions in a house concert at 7 o'clock tomorrow night, and tickets are $10.
If you're not familiar with the Auto Harp or Brian Bauer, you might be familiar with June Carter, who played the Auto mm-hmm. Harp. And it's an instrument that you can play a number of different ways, but this may be the best living Auto Harp player.
And you can see him for $10 in a room
very close,
twice the size of our studio.
Right.
So you really have to go. And that's it for Monday.
Becca Bacon-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Over the last few years, television has been full of televised court proceedings in shows like Judge Judy or Divorce Court. Locally, Jones Television has broadcast cases that come before Judge Marianne Gunn in the Washington County Drug Court. There are more than 2,000 drug courts in the country, which provide an alternative to prison. Instead of jail time, nonviolent drug addicts undergo intense therapy, monitoring, and counseling. Recently, Judge Gunn halted televising drug court after she asked the Judicial Ethics Advisory Committee for its opinion of the potential national broadcast of her drug court by, quote, commercial media from California. The ethics panel disapproved of both local and national broadcasts. Tonight at 7 in the Arkansas Union Theater on the University of Arkansas campus, a panel will consider this recent controversy in the context of the larger question of the issues surrounding cameras in the courtroom. The discussion will follow the premiere of the 30-minute documentary Therapeutic Justice: Life Inside Drug Court. The film is the second documentary produced by Emmy Award winner and UA graduate Jesse Abdenauer. He now teaches broadcast journalism and mass communication at Arkansas State University in Jonesboro. I spoke with him last week as he was driving across the state to Fayetteville for the premiere. After working on the film for 2 years, he says he finished editing the documentary last Sunday. He explains that he got the inspiration for his film while obtaining his master's degree in journalism at the U of A.
I took a feature writing class with Brett Schulte, a professor at the University of Arkansas, and it was for another assignment, an assignment for a print feature story, and I wanted to do a story on Marianne Gunn, the judge who is in charge of drug court. And so I had heard about her from a few people that I knew and thought she would make a good profile story. And when I did the research for the story and did the interviews and just put it all together, a lot of it became more about the actual drug court and less about her. It was still based around her, but there were so many interesting facts that I found out and just so many different facets of drug court that I found out about while I was working on that story, that it turned into kind of bigger thing, which was more about the actual drug court. And I just became more and more interested in it. And around the same time, I knew I was going to be producing a documentary thesis as part of the requirements for my master's degree. And I was just looking for a documentary topic. So when you try to come up with a topic or a subject to do a documentary on, you want to find out if people have done it before because you're looking for a unique story. In any kind of journalism, you're kind of trying to be unique. So there didn't seem to be a whole lot on drug court in general, and there wasn't really much at all as far as movies or documentaries on the Northwest Arkansas drug court. So I figured this is a great story. No one's really done it. You've got all this drama because of the people that are in drug court. You've got Marianne Gunn, who is such a forceful, energetic personality. You've got, people trying to beat their addictions, and it's kind of an uplifting story a lot when people graduate from the program. So, it's got a lot of feel-good elements, too, and you kind of root for people. There's a lot of human interest. There's a human interest element in it because you get to know some of these people that are in drug court when you watch the TV show or when you watch my film. Hopefully, you kind of get to know these people at least a little bit, and you're kind of rooting for them to succeed. And so that is the human interest element is a big element in stories, as you know. The human interest element is a big part of just looking for a good story and trying to find a story that will connect with people. So there was just so many elements that kind of scream out at you to do a story on it. I figured I had to make this my next documentary.
Now, prior to your work on this documentary, did you have any knowledge of drug court or how it worked?
No, not at all. The way I found out about drug court was probably, I never even heard of drug court until I heard about Matt Jones. And that's another element that I thought was another hook or another interesting part of the whole tale is just there's this local celebrity NFL football player who brought a lot of attention to drug court and brought it to my attention because I had never heard of it before. And so I just heard he was going through it and I didn't know much about it, and that kind of got me intrigued. And so that's pretty much how I found out about drug court in general and specifically the Washington-Madison County Drug Court.
And one of the interesting things that's going on right now is that Jones TV has filmed it for the past couple of years and aired it on their television station, and now they were talking about going national with it. And Judge Gunn had talked to an ethics board about it, and they didn't think that it was ethically right. And that's one of the things that you'll be talking about at the premiere on Monday, yes?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right.
From your perspective, how do you feel about the whole situation, ethically speaking?
Well, ethically speaking, I think it's fine. I'm no lawyer and I'm no judge, but I've done a lot of research in this area. I wrote a paper about the history of cameras in the courtroom and how that might relate to drug court cameras.
And most of the research that's been done on cameras in the courtroom in general, in civil and criminal cases, you know, more regular courts, is that the camera really has no effect as far as affecting the outcome, as far as affecting whether someone is guilty or innocent, or whether justice is being served. So overall, most of the research seems to show that cameras do not affect the bottom line. Now, there has been some research that shows that cameras make people a little more nervous, and people might act a little differently. I mean, I think, you know, I've been shooting video for over 10 years. I was in TV news. I shot a lot when I was a TV reporter, news reporter, and sports anchor, sports reporter. And I know that once you turn the camera on, once you hit record, you can't help but change something. I mean, whether people act, you'll go to a football game and people will start acting crazy, or, you know, fans, or you'll see people walk away, they'll be really shy. So the camera, they'll either play up to it or play down to the camera. It affects things for sure. But as far as serving justice, I don't believe, and from what I've read and what I can tell in my layman's opinion as far as legal issues, it doesn't seem to affect the bottom line. So I would say that they should continue the TV program. And as Judge Gunn would say, this is an educational benefit to the community to be able to see drug court. And again, it's like a real life drama that's unfolding in front of your eyes on TV. Now, I mean, there is an entertainment value to it. It's on TV and people want to watch it. So in some way there is an entertainment value to it, but I still see it as mostly educational because, again, it can be, you know, Judge Gunn sees it as well. She hopes that parents sit down with their kids and watch it and use it as kind of a maybe a motivational tool to show some of the effects, what can happen when you get addicted to drugs. I believe that Judge Gunn has also stopped going to schools for the time being. And I also think that's unfortunate. I hope that continues in the future, because I think again, it's a good educational tool to show the reality of what drugs can do to people's lives. So another thing that I tell people is that, and other people have said this too, I'm not the only one, TV cameras and cameras in general seem to take the fall for the media. They take a lot of the blame for just all media, when I don't really see much difference between a print reporter going to a drug court session and writing down everything that happens and printing it in the paper. I don't see how that's much different from shooting video of a drug court session and then just showing it. You know, again, there's no evidence that, from what I can tell, that electronic media disrupt the process more than print media. So I think, unfortunately, people, even people in the legal field, kind of jump to conclusions about cameras and just automatically assume that they are corrupting the process.
Now, during your work on this documentary, was there anything interesting that you learned or anything that surprised you?
Well, there was plenty interesting. I mean, it was one of those kind of topics where there's no shortage. You don't really get bored very much because there's always something happening in drug court or something going on. As far as things that surprised me, well, I was kind of surprised at how effective the Washington-Madison County Drug Court is. They have one of the highest success rates in the country. And again, when you're thinking about doing a story, this kind of makes it a better story if there's all these unique things going on in this particular drug court and it's successful, because Judge Gunn recently won an award. She won an FBI award in Washington, D.C., and we have that in the film. We follow her as she goes to Washington, D.C. To accept this award. She wins an award for the work that she does in the schools. And so she was being recognized on a national level, and drug court is being recognized on a national level for being successful. I think the average success rate, average graduation rate for drug court is around 60%. They're somewhere around 80%. And I, again, I have these statistics a little more spelled out in the film. But I was surprised at how just how effective this particular drug court is. And I think you have to credit Judge Gunn for the, some of the success. And you know, I wouldn't be surprised if going to schools and having the drug court on TV contributes to the success rate.
So this will be the first public screening of your documentary. What it's still early, but do you have plans to show your film elsewhere?
Yes, I'd like to, definitely. I was hoping to submit it to different film festivals around the country. That's something I did with my last film, the Knocked Out movie. And I was able to get in some film festivals with that one. So I'm hoping to kind of travel down the same road, you know, submit it to film festivals. And possibly I would like to get it on the local PBS network, AETN, you know, if they would like to have it. So those are two avenues that I'm really hoping to explore, at least at this point, just AETN and getting it in some film festivals.
And what are you hoping that audiences will get out of coming and seeing your film, either now or at a future film festival?
Well, I think documentaries are a different animal because you want them to be entertaining, but you also usually, most documentaries, you want to kind of have an angle and you want people to take something from it. I think drug courts in general are just a great program, and they're not perfect, but I think that they're a much better alternative to prison. I think that they've proven to be much more effective than prison for treating addiction. And so I guess I hope people really take away the fact that drug court should be supported, and Northwest Arkansas Drug Court and what they're doing, that should be supported. And just that it's something that, that, you know, people don't know a lot about, and hopefully this movie will open their eyes to it and just, at least if nothing else, educate them on drug courts and what they're all about and why I think that they are a good alternative.
Jesse Abdenauer's documentary, Therapeutic Justice, Life Inside Drug Court, will premiere at a free screening at 7 o'clock tonight in the Arkansas Union Theater. Following the film, a panel including an attorney, journalism professor, retired circuit judge, local drug court participant, and Abdenauer will discuss the pros and cons of cameras in the courtroom. I spoke with Jesse Abdenauer last week. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And this is Ozarks at Large. Hobbs State Park Conservation Area will present Living Forests at the Parks Visitor Center October 22nd, 23rd, 24th. That's this approaching weekend. You can join Mother Nature. She introduces her many forest friends and listen to each of the animals' story and learn what you can do to make their lives easier. Smokey Bear will also be there to join this fun, non-scary holiday treat for the whole family. And animal costumes are encouraged. There's a cost and registration. Prepayment is required. If you'd like more information about all of this at Hobbs State Park, 789-5006.
The Fort Smith Public Library will present the following free programs and events. A story time in Spanish will be held at the main library on Saturday, October 23rd at 2:30 p.m. And Mahjong for Beginners will be held at the Dallas Branch Library on Mondays at 6:30 p.m. beginning October 25th. For the very latest on what's taking place at the Fort Smith Public Library, 479-783-0229 or fortsmithlibrary.org.
KUAF's Fall On Air fundraiser begins Wednesday, and we're trying to collect as much of our $140,000 goal as possible in advance. This is KUAF station manager Rick Stockdale asking you to help make this fall fundraiser our shortest ever by contributing today before the on-air fundraiser begins. You can mail a check to KUAF, University of Arkansas, Fayetteville, 72701, or contribute online at KUAF.com. Click on Contribute Now and fill in the blanks. Thanks a lot.
Local support for Ozarks at Large comes from psychiatrist Jerry Stein, MD, associate clinical professor, Colorado Medical School, offering adult psychotherapy and forensic civil and criminal evaluations from offices in Springdale and Eureka Springs. More information and appointments at 479-244-6582.
And local support for Ozarks at Large is also provided by Walton Art Center and the 10x10 Art Series, presenting NEA Jazz Master Kenny Barron Saturday, November 6th. Pianist Kenny Barron and his trio will be joined by tenor saxophonist David Sanchez. Tickets and more information about the 10x10 Art Series available at waltonartcenter.org or 443-5600. MANA is launching a free bi-monthly health education series this month. It's called Healthy Living, and the first event will be a breast health seminar titled For the Girls, Thursday night from 6 until 7 at MANA's Administration Building at 3383 North MANA Court. The event will feature a talk from Dr. Stacy Smith Foley and Dr. Kelly Johnson, both fellowship-trained breast imaging specialists. They'll be discussing the latest screening and tips for breast health in honor of Breast Health Awareness Month. To reserve your spot or for more information about Thursday's event, 571-6781.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville Rogers Fort Smith Natural Dam, a listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. KUAF has proudly served as your source for NPR programming for the past 25 years. Remember, you can listen at our website, KUAF.com.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Thanks for tuning in. Back tomorrow at noon with a brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. We'll be right back.